If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcast family, a growing community of music and cultural podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and of course, music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now.
About the grand reveal, while the whole world waiting on the same seven seas, going where they keep it to the day and by the day, let it play by fear, walking down in pain and road, can be a long way for some short change on a mercenary clown. Living the only, turn another page, never take one look around. Going down those painted roads, where the wild magnolia grows, and the walls of heaven grow. Going down those painted roads. For the Holy Grail, some secret to cracking all the codes of the cosmos with no detail. Instead of bleeding out every thorn from a flower to the nail, what would you do better if you knew better? Would you still be enjoying pain? I took a long way around the Palisades, got lost there a little while. Reading the marks drawn on the caves, I see the signs going down.
You've been listening to Painted Row from Chris Jacobs' forthcoming release, Color Where You Are, due out April 12th. Chris has been on our radar for a while because his music is as eclectic as he is talented. That is to say, both are diverse and interesting. It's hard to peg this singer-songwriter down because although his music is true to an Americana country tradition, the dude has all kinds of soul and is equally adept at writing love songs as he is at writing beautiful stories of the human condition. Certainly the latter is of great concern these days, given the socio-political climate that we find ourselves in. He paints his words with an eloquent brush full of meaning, and his musical chops and those of his band enhance his work's real charm. We were excited to catch up with Chris, and our conversation started when I asked what took so long for a follow-up to his 2016 release, Dust to Gold.
Well, life. I try to think about the 2 year between records gap, and we almost hit that. It was 3. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't too far off, but it was just a lot of working and really just not being in a rush to do it. And then when sort of the time was ticking, it was like, oh wow, we need to make a new record. It's one of those things. I don't know. Luckily it wasn't like 10 years.
No, man. Fair.
One of my favorite artists is this guy Willis Allen Ramsey, and I don't know if you ever heard of him. And he released a record in 1971, and it's a classic record that like every song is incredible on it, and he hasn't put one out since, and he's still around.
Oh wow.
And people ask him, you know, like when's the next record coming out? And his answer is, why? What's wrong with the first one?
Yeah, I know. I just, you know, everybody really loved Dust to Gold. So, you know, in anticipation of more music, that's why people want to hear new stuff.
And they did.
In fairness, they did, right? The Neville Jacobs record came out last year and it was amazing. And though it was a collaboration, you probably wrote a lot of that stuff. So I get it. I get that you're busy and stuff.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would have, to be honest, I would have liked this record to have come out maybe a year sooner. So, it's time can get away from you when you're mm-hmm. raising a baby and out on the road with the band and all that stuff. So that's really my answer, is just not really focused on making one. And then, not being in a position with the time or the capital to make one. And so... Luckily, all that kind of came together.
Your music, though, continues to be so eclectic, with an ode to so many timeless sounds and influences. I'm curious, do you dig in deep to one genre at a time? This is about your listening habits more than anything. Do you dig into, let's say, classic country records and then hit the soul stack and then hit some rock, or is it more really a case of a constant hodgepodge of, whatever fits the mood at the time?
I would say that I've definitely gone through phases of only listening to one type of thing. Lately, I guess it would probably be just, maybe I'm getting as ADD as the rest of the world, but, and it's like so easily all at your fingertips. But lately, I'd say, it'll be maybe like one artist that I'll just be like kind of back down the rabbit hole with, maybe across a few different genres at a time. I'll have like two or three people cue. If I go to listen, it's either like one of them, and then I'll move on, something, change my mood to something else. But yeah, I mean, generally, I would definitely say it's generally been a hodgepodge, where I'll be down like a deep Lightning Hopkins hole, and then I'll be also down like a George Jones or Merle Haggard hole, or something like that. So it's and to me it's an easy transition,
Right.
It doesn't seem
That certainly comes across in the music, right? In the music that you make, is that it can be so eclectic and yet feel like a Chris Jacobs record without hesitation. I mean, it just feels, though it's eclectic, it feels fairly normal for the kind of musician.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, that's the goal, trying to sound natural while still letting all of the influences seep in. And I feel, I've always kind of shied away from trying to just imitate one style, because then you fall into the habit of needing to be derivative and needing to like imitate and call up things more consciously and intentionally rather than letting them flow through naturally. And to me, that's a pure form of expression when you can just let the whole melting pot see its way through and filter through rather than like trying to be something, you know, you're just being it. And that's sort of how I've always approached music and sort of let the, you know, the songwriting thing has sort of been my, I guess, foundation or ground zero of putting all of the different things that I would like to do musically together. You know, there's the guitar playing world and there's the songwriting world and there's the lyrical world and all the different genres. And so it's like, how do I come up with my own sound? And I've used sort of just the songwriting template as, okay, let's start there and just write songs however they want to be written and let the guitar playing be indicative and reverent to the song that's happening. And then you move on and do another one and we can touch as many worlds as we want. And, you know, whatever feels natural, we'll just go for it. So that's, along early on in my musical adventures, I sort of came to that realization that that was going to be the way that I was able to put it all together and express it in, that was sort of my platform that I was going to use instead of just being a guitar player, you know.
It certainly makes the music and your words feel more authentic than trying to squeeze something into, you know, a form that's existed already, into some preconceived record label format or record or radio station format. This seems way more genuine and authentic as a songwriter and as somebody who needs to express themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of the only way that I know how to do it. I wouldn't even know where to start if it was like, okay, we're gonna pop this up and make it commercially viable. You know, like, well, what does that mean? Like, what? I'd have to like, you know, do some research on that. And see, like,
right,
you
right.
Know, what's
but,
in the?
But I
know,
mean,
yeah.
What I mean is, you know, writing a blues song for the sake of writing a blues song, or a country record for the sake of writing a country record. I mean. That's all well intended, but that's not the best way to probably go about the craft. Or maybe it is for some, but obviously not for you.
Right, not for me, yeah. I've never been able to like stay purely on task, like with one thing where like, you know, in the middle of a country song, I'll decide that it needs like some funky rhythm change to it or some weird chord that, you know, takes it somewhere else, and it's something that I hear in my head just as a result of all the different things that I've tried to absorb and learn. So maybe that's why it's all, I try not to overthink it and, uh-huh. and not do like, I haven't delved into any like concept-y records, you know, just cause I just kind of let the songs form themselves, you know?
Well, we'll get back to the switch in tempo and style in just a bit, because I do want to ask you about we'll all act like strangers, or we'll act like strangers in a second. But this record was mostly written in the studio, and I'm curious about whether or not that enhanced the experience. Well, this is a silly question, or dampen it, because the music is so great, but I don't think I mean dampen it. I mean, was it rushed? Because you are up against it when people are paying for studio time.
No, that's a good question. And I found it to be a healthy parameter to place on myself, like a productive boundary where I forced myself into focus. And a lot of times the initial or, you know, the early instincts are usually the best anyway when it comes to playing, writing. So it prevented me from overthinking.
Right.
You know, obviously, like, there's pros and cons to the, like, bring everything prepared into the studio and perform it well-rehearsed, and there's your record, as opposed to the, I have all these raw ideas. Let's go in and play them and record them. And then I'm going to sketch them out as we go and sketch out some of the lyrics. It's, you know, it's maddening to do it that way. And that's just how I did it. You know, just to, and I mean, really, it's like half the time I'm going, wow, this is incredible. Half the time I'm saying, I don't know if I'm ever going to write another lyric for the rest of my life. What am I going to do? I'm a fraud. I'm a failure. So I think it's, you know, you go through the normal creative demons in real time in a very sort of intensely focused way. But it, I do think that in the end it brought out some really good work, and it was a different approach for me. And I still had time to sit back. I still had time to sit back and tweak as I went. But it it allowed for a real natural instinctual thing, and that's all that, you know, that's the goal for me for making records, or like snapshots in time. And this was like a very distinct, like when I go back and listen to this record in 20 years, I'm going to remember what was going on in my life then, and in the world then, and how it was affecting me. And, you know, that was sort of what I wanted to present and touch on with this record. So, you know, next one might be the psychedelic guitar freakout record, you know, very well could be.
I don't see that.
Then I'm going to run with it. You never know.
But was it mostly you? Because I feel like this record, maybe more than the last one, is more collective. I mean, the band is at this point really tight, having, you know, been road driven. So was it mostly you putting the puzzle pieces together, or was it like, here's a riff, guys, what should we or could we do with it?
Yeah, no, it's good observation. The band was definitely more cohesive this time around than with Dust to Gold. I'd say that, you know, they played a huge part. You know, song to song, it was different approaches, because there were some songs that were written, you know, it wasn't that every song was just a complete sketch. So there were a few that I had that were complete, but then there were a few, and, you know, but even still, like, I don't tell these guys what to play, you know, like when I show them a song, it's just like, all right, let's play. Because I know that whatever they play is going to be better than anything I would have told them to play, because they're incredible. All three of those guys are just like so good. And they're like, you know, we have this brotherly bond now from all this road time. So we just have a really good, honest trust rapport, which is like a really special thing that you don't get a lot. So, you know, I have that comfort of knowing that I don't need to map out every twist and turn, but also there were some songs that were fairly raw that they definitely, you know, like for instance, Painted Roads is a good example. The first track on the record, that was one where I would say, you know, the song, the chords, the song, the melody, the lyrics, that was me, but all of the grooves and the various, you know, details, you know, I didn't write the bass. Yeah, you know, that particular song, I remember coming in and I had it as a more straight ahead kind of Tom Petty inspired thing in my head, and we played it and we listened back to it, and I was like, man, we can make this way more interesting. Let's fuck it up a little bit. And we went back in and Dusty started this, like, that syncopated beat, and we all just kind of fell in on a groove, and we sort of rebuilt it from there, which was exciting because it was sort of like, wow, maybe next time I'll just, you know, let you guys have this one too. You know what I mean? So it was like deconstruction of songs that I had written, you know, in a more kind of forward thinking, imaginative way as a collective. I'd say Painted Roads was the kind of example of that. And then, you know, others, I'm very, we didn't have a producer on this, so I'm very sort of egalitarian to a fault sometimes, and was sort of letting everybody's voices be heard. And we all kind of were all on the same page most of the time, so it wasn't a problem. But yeah, I'd say, you know, I wrote the songs, or, you know, the chords, the arrangements, and the lyrics and stuff, but, you know, as I say, the details and telling the guys what to play and all that is all up to them, and sort of in the moment stuff. And we definitely tweaked things as we went, as per suggestions, you know.
I got to give it up to Todd and Dusty because, I mean, the rhythm section is so hot on this record. Not to take away anything from Jonathan or your playing or even Daniel Clark's playing, but, I mean, that rhythm section's tight, real tight. Amazing.
Man, those guys are incredible. I've known them for over 15 years now. My old band, The Bridge, used to do a lot of hanging with their group, the DJ Williams Project. DJ Williams now plays guitar in Carl Denson's Tiny Universe. And his band, they're Richmond guys, and his band was the DJ Williams Project. I mean, they still play, actually, but Todd and Dusty were the rhythm section. And The Bridge and them used to do lots of shows together, lots of hangs, and they were like, I always just thought those guys were the shit. And then it sort of worked out that I was looking for a rhythm section and Dusty was looking for, was available to play. And so we linked up all those years later, and then Todd became available, and it was like, wow, I can't believe I got these guys now. But so it's a long friendship and admiration that's finally materialized, and I'm very grateful to have those guys. I mean, they're just very special. And Jonathan too. He's a monster.
And Daniel Clark, right? I mean, he's an accomplished player.
Yeah, Daniel's not in the band.
That just shows up on the record, right?
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to join the band, he's listening. But I just spoke to him the other day because he might join up and play a few of these shows that we have coming up with us, which is great. But Daniel, I mean, his resume is pretty incredible. Ryan Adams, Katie Lang, and he's an old Richmond guy with Dusty and Todd, so they suggested him coming in, and we sent him the tracks, and he came in and knocked all that out in a few hours and just played, again, didn't tell him what to play. I love that. Just, let the artists do what they do. And it's a magical thing sometimes.
Is that specifically him on Afterglow, or is it you on piano? I'm just curious.
Oh, that's him.
It's him.
No, I do not play the piano on the record. No, sir.
it's gorgeous. I mean, it's just beautiful.
I'll mess around here and there just to work an idea out, but I would never do that in public.
I was just going to ask, it's not specifically a socio-political record, but Under the Big Top certainly has some political overtones. Afterglow, there is some, you are making some statements without necessarily making statements. And I'm curious about how far you go in your writing before you think you're exposing yourself to being preachy.
Great question. Those two in particular were definitely inspired by the political climate. But to answer the question, when it's sort of like a matter of what do you do with that inspiration, that I'm really try to be careful about, where I don't just dwell in any sort of anger or trite frustration, and because that's just unproductive, and it's sort of like what else is new? We're what can I tell somebody? Hey, guess what? I hate Donald Trump. Oh wow, that's such an amazing thought. And it's like, so I try to be really conscious of what's the lesson here? What is the thing that we're there for? If you're angry and if you're frustrated, then what do you stand for? Because there's a lot of blame going around. There's a lot of finger pointing. So it's sort of like, if you're going to talk the talk, what does this make you feel other than angry? Like how are you going to make a better contribution because of it? And that's what I try to focus in on, is more the result of the emotion rather than just like, I'm pissed off, I'm sad, yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like the preachy thing. And I don't claim to have all the answers either from like a political perspective, where like I can stand up there and say, this is right, this is wrong. I have, my inclinations on a human level, but so like, I'm not trying to preach and tell you what to believe. Mm-hmm. And 'cause I don't know, I'm just sort of working it out myself, but trying to be aware of the, like I say, the result of the emotion,
right,
rather than just the emotion.
Let's have some fun for a second and get off of that,
yeah,
and talk about country funk, because when I got the record, or parts of the record at least, Rooster Coop was labeled country funk, and then I read through the material and I was like, yeah, that yeah, it could be Rooster Coop, or it could be called country funk.
Who sent you those tracks? I need to discuss something with them. That's fine.
Well, you know, because she lined this interview up. I mean, it is a fun song, and I'm curious more about, not about the song itself, but about this notion of country funk, because it's a little more than that. It has this, you know, New Orleans thing going on. You've been hanging around with Ivan, obviously, and there's a lot going on. I hear Little Feet, which is a good thing. But that's just a fun record, and it did come out of a riff, right? I mean, that's the story, at least. That is the story.
Yeah. That one came out of, like that. I sort of had the tune mapped out without any lyrics. I could sing it. You know, sometimes that's how I go about it, is like, mm-hmm. I could sing you the whole tune, but I'm just kind of singing in nonsensical manner. I think a lot of songwriters would say they do it that way too. It's just sort of getting the sounds and the rhythms out. And so that whole tune was mapped out that way and recorded that way. And then I painted the lyrics in last, but the, it started out as just kind of like that groove and the chords and the melody. And it was inspired by, there's a guy that I discovered named Larry John Wilson. I don't know if you ever checked him out.
No.
He's a songwriter. He was like from Macon, Georgia, and he put out a few records in the '70s. Hmm. And if you ever seen that documentary Heartworn Highways, he has a spot in that. But I heard this song called the Hoopy River Bottomland. We actually play that one too, but it's, and then there was a couple tunes on his record that it's just like the funkiest country sound. And then something, you know, a lot of these big burly man, he's got this real kind of deep funky voice, and he sings these like beautiful ballads too. But
awesome.
So I was like, man, we got to do something like this. So, you know, and when you got a funky rhythm section like those guys,
yeah,
it's easy. And then I sort of just, you know,
kind
of channeled some of that bluegrass riffage, you know, with the funky beats, and you know, that's, like I say, sort of just let the melting pot do its thing.
Yeah, and it certainly does. Final song for me that I really enjoyed. I mean, I enjoyed the whole, everything I got to hear, but We'll Act Like Strangers. And I sort of teased this at the beginning because it starts off one way in this really soulful, funky manner. And then it takes this more sincere, serious turn with like some real harmonizing and some overdub vocals that I assume are you. What made you make that, you know, slight right turn, or am I missing something?
No, you're not. It came to me that way, where like I remember I was like humming the tune to myself, and then all of a sudden in my mind it took that turn into like that country waltz.
Yeah.
And it was a little different when I imagined it. The change happened earlier and then went back to the funky thing. But you know, that was one that we sort of like worked out the way we worked out arrangement wise in the studio. But the transition was an easy one for me in my mind. And it was such a funny thing when it kind of came to me that way, that I was like, I gotta write this tune, because it was different. It hit me unexpectedly when I was humming it out and sort of working it out. So I figured I had to put that one down.
Yeah, I really
Again,
I
re- sort of like
sorry go ahead
it sort of goes goes between, you know, the Al Green influence, then into the George Jones thing. It's like, you know, why not, you know?
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's cool that, you know, you're able to just do this stuff. I mean, without worrying about, you know, and again, that's where the authenticity comes in. Just do what you feels right, and people will hopefully dig it because you dig it. And I got to tell you, it's worked. Color Where You Are comes out April 12th. There are a series of dates coming for people, and they can certainly check those out at chrisjacobs.com. There is some festivals, and I'm sure, you'll be playing with our friends in Dark Star in May. I'm sure that there will be filler here and there, and people should just keep an active eye on the website to know what's going on, right?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, we're making it up as we go along, so don't miss anything.
Thanks for taking the time, man. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate the sentiment that went into this record and the music. And let's not wait 3 more years for another one. All right.
I'm already trying to get ahead of that.
So, of course.
You're right. But thank you, Ira. I appreciate you, man. Thanks so much.
What a guy. Fabulous storyteller and a talented musician who is passionate about all facets of his craft. I can tell you firsthand that Color Where You Are is equally as good, if not better, than Dust to Gold, and you definitely need to keep this album on your radar. For tour dates and much more, including our really cool album trailer video for Color Where You Are, visit chrisjacobs.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off of Color Where You Are. Here is the Funky Rooster Coop.
Caught a rooster around the hen house, but I know it ain't a roof rat. Something funky in the barnyard, got a horns that ain't a loose cat. Little bird chirping around the cage, saying that ain't crow for days. My mama, she told me, got to keep up on the feet I'm on ya. You're bound to get bold, just come down to swoop. Gonna have to get the honk on, try to see what's going on here. Heard a creaking by the weather vane, ain't no sign of the wind, no rain. Well, my mama, she told me, eventually I'm gonna be a soldier. Looking for a bite. Mama head laying in the pen with her own little appetite, little appetite. Early in the morning, little mama crow, tell her ain't right, but I knew where she low. Early in the morning, new cow crying, and no butter since the bull ain't been by. Was worried about that gal, and have a little gal would be about a mile long by now. And there they go walking two by two, and I wonder what's a little bitty boy to do. Oh, well, my mama, she told me, keep it tidy where you eat, I want ya. What's good for the gander, my temper good. Round your rooster coo.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.